Welcome back to another episode of Obsessed with Death. Thank you so much for continuing to listen and support the podcast. If you haven't done so, make sure you leave a review or give us 5 stars. It helps the podcast a ton, along with telling a friend or sharing on social media. All those things are truly appreciated and help the show a ton. Today we are joined by Nikki from Numbered Days, which is an organization that can offer you an affordable website for your business that is explicitly designed for and by death workers. Numbered Days knows that your work is special, and unlike most website designers and agencies, Numbered Days is budget-friendly and will be able to help you create a website and branding specifically for death doulas, grief workers, funeral workers, basically anybody offering death services. We had a really great chat. I'm really excited for you guys to check out this episode. If you want more info on Numbered Days, make sure you go to numbered-days.com. I'll, of course, have all of the links and all the information in the show notes, and we discuss more during the episode. So please enjoy another episode of Obsessed with Death. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's great to have you here. If you don't mind, I'd love for you maybe just to do like a quick little introduction, introduce yourself and sort of tell, people listening who you are and what you do.
Sure. Thanks, Rob. Pleasure to be here. Really excited. My name's Nikki. I'm a death doula. I'm also a website designer, graphic designer. That's my day job by trade. And my passion is really the death doula work and the educational piece behind that, and really tying in how that fits into living. Like all of us here on this Obsessed with Death space and just kind of the death world in general, right? We all know that contemplating death and contemplating our mortality can help us live richer lives. And I'm really passionate about that kind of intersection, which always seems to happen at that area of death or like terminal diagnosis. Because that's when those kind of questions really come into the fore, when people tend to try to, I don't know, avoid them during daily life, but they really become glaring and present during, brushes with your impermanence.
One of the things that I was curious about and something that you made clear to me was the website work that you do and how it's specific for death workers, which I love. I love sort of, finding people who are looking to explore that space specifically in any avenue. But something web design isn't something I've really seen a lot of. What was the thought process there on creating these websites specifically for, the death worker and the death community?
Sure. Yeah. Great question. I actually just like popped on Facebook on a couple death worker spaces and groups that I'm part of. And I just put it out there one day. I was just thinking in my head, like, I wonder if there's a need for, like, would anybody be interested, death doulas, death workers, grief workers, if they would want, assistance with websites and marketing? Because I see on those Facebook groups, people would always be like, oh, I just finished my doula training. What do I do now? How do I get started? Do I need a website? Do I need a logo? Do I just start? Do I get business cards? And they just were like mired up in all of this muck. And I'm like, oh, well, this is my day job and this is how I literally put food on my table. So I'm quick at it since I do this all day, every day. I know the platforms and I'm like, oh, this could be interesting. Maybe I could help. So again, thinking about that need when the new doulas were coming out of the trainings and they didn't really know what to do. I'm like, I posted one day. I said, hey, is there a need for this in this kind of community? And the response I got was very surprising. There were a lot of doulas who were emphatically like, yes, I really do need these things. A lot of them haven't reached back out because that's just kind of the nature of the beast. But just kind of having that like verification of, oh, that this could be a space that I could maybe serve was really interesting to me. And again, because this is my day job and I'm quick at it, I don't need to charge exorbitant amount of monies that like my web my graphic design agency that I work for, they need money to pay overhead costs and pay me and all that research and such. And for me, a lot of those factors are kind of cut out because, you know, I am a death doula. I am a death educator. So I do have that context. I don't need to go research like what's a death doula? How do I speak to these people? Like what is the copywriting and the language and the terminology? Because like most designers and most just people in the real world don't know anything about what we do or what we offer. But because I'm familiar with that, I can actually, in my calls with the death workers, I can be saying things like, you know, tell me about your services. Tell me how you serve your clients. Tell me like what makes you different from a different doula and how do you uniquely serve your community? And then let's translate that visually into a website. So yeah, it was interesting. And then every once in a while I'll pop back up on Facebook and ask if people need the websites. I'll kind of, now it's more of a like a concentrated marketing effort. And I'll mention it and people will send some replies and send some inquiries. And you know, all some of them kind of follow through, some of them don't, but it's been encouraging to be like, oh, this is a niche I could tap. And it's been nice because I don't charge that much, so I can feel good that I'm not scalping over these death workers who are trying to offer this very, very needed service. And it's very fulfilling to be able to kind of like meet that need.
Yeah, I mean, you obviously working in the death space as well, you sort of have that understanding, right,
Yeah.
of what that that price point should be that would, be considered reasonable for you and for your client. And I think there's a ton of value in also the fact that you know the language, that you understand this world already.
Sure, yeah.
And I think it can be intimidating to maybe approach somebody when it comes to building a website or marketing yourself. A lot of people aren't necessarily super comfortable with that part of the work. And it's something that we sort of discussed, and just in going back and forth before the podcast, where you should be able to have this outlet for yourself that's going to reach people, because you're trying to do this work, this work that we all consider very important work. And if there's not a place for people to get a hold of you to do that work, then what's the point, really? So I think that's great. I love that you're a part of the community and also trying to help. And you're using some of these other skills that you have to do so. So I think that's really great. And it sort of makes me curious, like you said, this is sort of your job, right? Is working in this space and creating websites and all of that. But it seems like you're looking to move more towards the death space, like you mentioned, being a doula. Where did this interest come from? One of the things I'm always sort of curious about with my guess is what your relationship with death is like and how much you think about it. So I guess for you, it's more in the aspect of, why, where did the interest come from to join this space, and what is your relationship, with death like in general?
Yeah, awesome questions too. Well, I majored in graphic design and marketing, and that was kind of my straight path from high school through college. And I got hired in that field immediately after graduating, so it seemed like all my steps were counted out for me, and I knew what my plan was going to be, and everything was great. The job I got was great. I'm still there, obviously. That's still where I am, 5 years now and counting. And about a year into that, I was doing great. I had my new apartment, moved out of mom and dad's house and climbing the ladder and all that stuff. And I kind of woke up one day and I was really miserable. And I didn't know why. It just felt really empty. Not to be dramatic, but it felt like, oh, you're just gonna get up every day and do this graphic design stuff and sell stuff to people they don't need to buy with money they don't have. And you're gonna do that every day until you die. That seems really shallow, and that seems like, I don't know, just not the best way to spend your life. Is this what you want to do? Is this how you want to serve? Like, and again, you know, you need marketing to make the wheels of the world go around. I'm not knocking that, but for me personally, it just felt a little empty. And so I started finding myself stuck in this awful existential muck, and it was very painful and confusing. It's like, oh, I'm so privileged and I did everything I ever wanted, and why is this so hard? So I kind of fell down this like rabbit hole of self-help podcasts and reading, like, immersing my education in philosophy and reading all these other self-help articles and just really getting down in there. And one day, I don't even know how, I can't remember how, I came across this article about, they're called Palliative Care Biographers, and it's an organization, I think somewhere in Australia, and they just interview clients of theirs on palliative care, not hospice care, just palliative care. And they tell their clients' life stories. They will record their interviews with them, and then eventually they'll either, I can't remember if they publish them into books or they just kind of compile the interviews into a little like document or a recording. But to me, that sounded really cool. And I'm also a writer, so this idea of telling your life story was immediately very impactful to me. And so, going down the palliative care train, I started looking into hospice care. That was just kind of the logical next step. When you start searching things, hospice care comes up next to palliative care. And a friend of mine, I told him about this like existential crisis I was having, and his dad happened to be the or one of the volunteer people for Beata Hospice in my area. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, and he's like, maybe I should just connect you to my dad, and you can chat about this with him. And I said, oh, okay, cool. And I did, and it was a great conversation. He got me signed up with Beata. And I decided, I'm like, he's like, yeah, basically, if you feel kind of called to this work, why don't you volunteer and see how it works? Like how you feel about it. And I said, sure. So I did that for 6 months, prior to the pandemic, to COVID and all that stuff. And I absolutely fell in love with it. And around that time as well, I discovered the end of life doula movement that was a little more new than it is now. Like that was 2019, so COVID hadn't even really happened yet. So I was discovering the doula program. I found it through U the University of Vermont. Francesca Arnoldi was kind of spearheading the program at the time, and so I ended up taking that training, and again just fell even more deeply in love with just that whole the community, the space, the concepts behind death work and contemplating death and being with death and just being in that space. And so from there, the rest is kind of history. That's just how I ended up getting into this work. And so that supplemented with my hospice volunteering was very illuminating. I also decided to go back to grad school and enroll in a master's program for hospice chaplaincy. I just wanted to kind of keep my options open because, again, doulas were a very, very new field, even less than they are now. And I'm like, I don't know if I ever want to make this a career. I need to think of some, like, what would that look like practically? So, ergo, the master's degree. And as far as my relationship to death, my grandparents had died, how many years ago? Like 2 years, no, three to 5 years prior to any of this, prior to any of this existential crisis, the hospice, any of it. And I largely didn't really think about it consciously, but I remembered all of the negative experiences with that. They all kind of came back to the surface once I started doing this hospice work. And it wasn't particularly bad, but I guess it would just be I guess I'd say it's a typical death in America kind of thing where, I don't know, you're just not really prepared for it. There's a bunch of logistical issues. It's like, what even is hospice? When should we do it? My grandmother had Parkinson's, so it was a slow decline for her. My grandfather died pretty abruptly. He had a stroke years ago, and then he ended up having heart failure like 10 years later, 20 years later. 20 years later, yeah, sorry. He had like a very, very massive heart attack, which ended up killing him. His death was abrupt, so he like lingered in the hospital for 3 days. But my grandmother, she died after him, so she was widowed. It was very, very, very painful for her, obviously, and she lingered for what was it, a year after him, and it was awful. Like just the nursing home situation, and like she had to be moved around a couple of times because the care levels there weren't the best, to put it nicely. And it was hard on my mom, like watching her go through that. And my grandparents lived in Georgia. My mother and my family is in Pennsylvania. So her having to do all that long distance in addition to all that. And the support was for her was not really there. So it was really difficult. And I remember thinking, I was so angry when it was happening. Like, this can't be how it is. But, I just thought, this is how it is. This is dying in America. This is great. Cool. And so when I discovered all this death doulas, death worker stuff, fast forwarding like 5 to 7 years in the future, I'm like, wait, no, it doesn't have to be this way. Holy freaking crap. It can be better. It can be better because we can talk about this stuff. We can have these conversations. I'm not obviously here to glorify death. I don't like when that kind of creeps into the death space. But I do think that these conversations can make it a little bit more manageable. Like there are certainly situations my mom had to deal with that would have been better if she had been equipped, or if we had been equipped, or my grandmother. You know, it was just hard. And so that was kind of my relationship to death, and like all that stuff just came back to the surface when I was actively immersing myself in this space. You know, other than that, I don't really have any. I'm blessed and very fortunate so far to not have had any terribly close encounters with death. Like my immediate family is all still fine, my loved ones and such. I mean, my grandparents are all gone at this point, but it was again, it was kind of, I was younger when it happened. So, yeah, that was my long-winded answer to the death story. I kind of came to all this work. It's been a trip.
Yeah, it's interesting. You mentioned getting the going through or the idea of the master's program as sort of the direction to go when looking to figure out how to make this a career. And I guess I'm sort of curious as to, I mean, what do you think? The end, is there an end goal? Are you still sort of figuring it out? How do you sort of see all of this ending? Like, even after the master's program, I would imagine there's still some pretty hard decisions to make on what you would do with the rest of your life. Have you sort of come to any sort of idea of what it is you truly want to do in this space?
Honestly, all that diddling around with those kind of questions is the reason why I'm a little bit late to practicing death work, right? That and a bunch of other personal chaos we can, I'm sure, talk about that later. But there's like a good, what, 4 year gap in between my certification as a doula and now, where I'm trying to really immerse myself in that space. And it was because I was trying to work out those questions of like, hey, what are you doing? You're spending all this money and going back into student debt on this degree that you like, what are you going to do with this? And at first I thought the answer was going to be kind of like what you were saying, hard and fast. Yes, let's switch careers. Let's be a chaplain. That's kind of what I was, that's what I'm majoring in. So, hospice chaplaincy. Let's maybe work for a hospice. Let's maybe work for a hospital. My time in hospice volunteering kind of showed me that, I don't know, working for a hospice seems maybe like something I would do, but it seems very unsustainable for me. I know my limits, and I know that those poor people work so hard. And when I was in training, they would be like eating their lunch in the car on their way to their clients, and I'm like, hey, why are you eating lunch in the car? And they're saying, oh, well, we don't really have time to stop and take lunch. This is our lunch break. We're driving and shoving food in our mouth from our Tupperware container. And I was thinking to myself, wow, that's a little like, that's really noble of you, but holy crap, like maybe we should get more people doing this work. I don't know. And so I don't know if I want to work in hospice. I also used to think that the hospital was the route for me, but then I'm like, hospitals, that environment, I don't know, would be good for me, maybe on a part-time scale. So what I've come to now at this point is I'm kind of trying to blend all of this together. I think as far as the end goal is concerned, like once I get my degree, I'm gonna have to obviously do clinical hours, which will probably be in a hospital. So I'll have to deal with it sooner or later. Once I get the degree, I envision some kind of conglomeration of this death worker website business, of my current day job. I don't really want to walk away from it totally, but I would very, I probably am going to be stepping that down to like more of a part-time position, so I'm not the only one who's like working so hard for that company kind of thing, and I have more time to work on these death worker efforts. So like a part-time blend of that, of the death worker websites, and I would like to eventually get more experience as a death doula. Right now I'm offering my service for free, but eventually I will charge something for it. And then, you know, part-time work as a chaplain as well. I don't really know exactly like how this is going to work, but that's where I've landed at this point. It's kind of a big old happy mix of all of it. And we'll see how it plays out. I've had my plans derailed a lot in the last couple of years, and at this point I'm like, you know what? We're just going to move in a direction and life will show me what it wants when I get there. I have a couple of years to go.
Yeah, I like that. I
This
think,
program.
yeah, that as long as you're sort of in moving in that direction, right? You're moving towards a direction that you're eventually looking to make as like the final destination. I think that's okay, and all the stuff that sort of happens along the way, that's only gonna, hopefully make the final decision a little bit easier. And yeah, I think experience and being able to really do the work is what's going to show you hopefully what it is you truly want to do. And I think that's great that you're sort of offering this doula work for free right now, because I think there are some people to where that's really their only option, and
For
it's
sure.
great for you as well, for the experience. If people want to reach out to you for some free doula work, where could they go for that?
You can go to my website, numbered-days.com, just the little dash. And there's a link there for free virtual death doula support. You just click that, and that should take you to like an info page. You can also go to the contact, or yeah, there's an info page, and you can book in like a quick call to chat and see if we would be a good fit, or if I would, if it doesn't work out, and maybe you would benefit more from either someone in person or someone like a mental health professional, then there could obviously be referrals as well.
That's
I'm
great.
not worried about trying to do more than I can chew, but I'm a
Sure.
listening ear, and I
Yeah.
do have the resources and tools, so.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people are just curious as well, and I think that's a great outlet to have if they're just sort of curious about the work and the space and meeting somebody. I think that could be beneficial for everyone. And then, of course, the Numbered-Days website is great for if you're looking for web sites and all that other stuff as well. When we first started talking and going back and forth on doing this podcast, and I like to do a little bit of a pre-interview, just kind of getting an idea of who you are and what it is we could talk about. You mentioned a lot of great stuff, and I think we've covered a little bit of it. There was one thing that you mentioned that I really am curious about, and I think will be interesting to discuss on the podcast was I'm not a huge hiker. I live near a mountain. I'm in the desert. I'm familiar, but something like what you described when we were talking is so far out of my wheelhouse. I can't even comprehend doing something like that. And you sort of made this great little tie-in to where it really did seem to sort of help you with the work that you're doing now, or at least your perspective on it. I would love to hear more about, this point in your life and the experiences that you had during all of that.
Yeah, so my 900-mile long ass section hike, or abbreviated, it's called a LASH, section hike of the Appalachian Trail. That was in 2022, so I guess 2 years ago now. Feels like yesterday. Feels like
Wow.
last summer. I spent 3 months out there backpacking from West Virginia to Maine. Oh, back when I still lived in the East Coast, at the time I lived in Baltimore. Now I'm in Utah. There were some interesting circumstances that got me out there. But it all worked out really well. I set out by myself. I didn't really have any friends or anyone who would go with me on such a crazy trip. And I ended up meeting a really great group of people. It was great. It was unexpected. It was very organic, and we all traveled together in varying degrees. There was at one point the group was like 10 people at its largest, and at its smallest it was 3. And we're all still in touch to this day. It was great. And just I had a lot of time to just be alone with my thoughts, even when I
Yeah.
wasn't talking with them. It's a long time to just kind of chill. And for most part, I didn't really listen to music. I chose to not do that, because I wanted to just kind of sit and think and contemplate. My life had sort of exploded with the end of a long-term relationship, and my living situation was gone. So I was trying to figure out where I was going to go. And even once I solved that problem, I'm like, all right, so am I going to fix this relationship or what? And then even then beyond that, it was also like, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? I still have this death work stuff stewing in the background. Like, how does any of this work? So I was hoping to take some time to reset and figure that out. It turns out when you're hiking, you do have a lot of time for thinking, and I did get that, but you also have a lot of time of just like complaining of like, oh my God, my feet hurt so much. I'm tired. I smell bad and I want some food. And there was a lot of that. And it's like,
Yeah.
I'm not doing as much deep introspection as I wanted to do. I'm mostly just complaining. But even in that complaining, there was a lot of just being in the moment that you get when you're out in nature. And that's like, I guess, the whole resurgence of the nature bath thing, or nature bathing, I think is what it's called. And there really is something to that because, wow, I don't think humans are meant to be, I don't know, cooped up in these concrete jungles and these little bitty apartments and
Yeah.
Not getting sunshine and not listening to the leaves or the birds chirping. And my God, I can't even convey how peaceful and soothing that was. And when I started getting into New Hampshire, once we made it that far, I was in this range of mountains called the Whites. And oh my goodness, they were so beautiful. They were breathtakingly pretty. I've always been a sucker for gorgeous mountain ranges. And Like I would almost like cry. Like, this is so beautiful. I'm so lucky to be here. Holy crap. And it was just such a immersion in living for me. Like I've always felt closest to, I don't know, God, the universe, everything, just life itself when I'm outside in nature, in those kind of beautiful moments, those beautiful places. And so it was just like, holy shit, this is what alive is for me. And granted, that might be someone who doesn't like hiking at all. That's totally not going to apply to them. But it was the first time I ever really tasted that feeling. And I got to just not just taste it for like, oh, one night of fun or one day of fun, but I got to just marinate in that for months.
I'm curious about, it obviously sounds like a great experience. Was there any sort of like any shift in perspective when it came to just life and death in general?
Really, what I really had out there was, like I was saying, that immersion in the aliveness feeling. My focus and my perspective on death didn't change, but I kind of came to this metaphor after a couple months after I got back from the trail. It didn't happen when I was out there, believe it or not. But after stewing on it for ages and just kind of sitting in, like, oh, I miss the trail, I miss this, I miss that. Here's my life. Like I was really struggling to kind of realign all of those different components. And I thought, oh wow, like I feel like this hiking thing was a really good metaphor for life and how being out there in that aliveness felt like being in a moment and just kind of soaking it all in and not rushing and not pushing and not doing this hustle culture thing that we're so fond of here in good old America. But at the same time, I'm not just kind of sitting and I'm not just stagnating. I have like a real problem with balancing. I have a problem with balancing different states of being, I guess I would say, where I either am a lazy loaf and I have trouble motivating myself and it's like mental health, take care of yourself and pamper yourself, and then I don't get anything done, and then I get mad at myself for not going towards my goals. And then the opposite side of me is I push too hard and I burn myself out and I hustle, 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 and I that's not sustainable. And I noticed that I don't think this is just a problem endemic to me, because I look around and I see that that's kind of a thing that a lot of people deal with. We're in this age of like mental health awareness, and we talk about it and we talk about it and we talk about it, but it's not really gotten any better. In fact, everyone, like millennials especially, 20 somethings, 30 somethings, they're all struggling, and it's almost like people just don't know how to find that balance between moving forward in your life and going after the things that you want, but not doing it to a point where you burn out, but also not just sitting around in your feelings and not going towards your goals and being kind of how do I say this? Purposelessness, purposeless. Just kind of not doing anything that makes you feel like you have that forward momentum. And I think that humans in time, eternal, have kind of wanted that, whether it's like the purpose of finding a mate or taking care of the tribe or whatever. And now it's just kind of morphed a little bit, but people still want purpose. It's not just like we just want to sit around, that's enough. But at the same time, it's not just only do purpose and hustle towards that and not sit around and smell the daisies. And I think that trail experience really showed me that you can do both. And kind of contemplating, and I think kind of the knowledge kind of going into it that I had of death awareness and like this kind of space, because I had obviously been inundated in that world before my hike. Having that knowledge was a really good lens for me, because I think if I went into it without that knowledge, it might have just been like, yay, this is the trail, and I wouldn't have been trying to see if it would fit in a greater framework. And this idea of appreciating life more because you know it's finite, because you know it's ending. I mean, even on trail, there were times when some really good friends that I made, they ended up parting ways, they ended up getting off the trail, they ended up leaving, and I would be like, oh wow, I noticed that I'm really savoring their presence so much more now that I know they're about to leave. And it's like, huh, isn't that funny? Because that's what happens in the death, in like the death life, like this kind of space as well. Like when you know that someone's terminally ill or anything like that, suddenly it's like, oh my gosh, let's go see the person. Their time is almost left, almost out. Suddenly every second you have with them is a big deal. And I realize that it's not written realistic to view life like that every single day, but that's something that I'm passionate about, and I think a lot of folks here on this community are as well, is just that concept of, contemplating what contemplating death and contemplating someone who you love, their death. It really helps you cultivate this sense of profound gratitude that goes just beyond like count your blessings, thankful gratitude that you see on mugs and stuff. Like it's not surface level. It's like bone deep. Oh my God, I love you. I'm so happy you're in my life. Thank you for walking in my door tonight and being alive. And I get to hug you and cherish you. And I think that all kind of tied together. And I really don't think I thought about any of this on the hike necessarily, but it all fell into place when I came home and I got to really stew about it. And I was really sitting with those questions of like, what do I want? And what do I want this work to look like? And what's the next step of my life going to be? Because I actually ended up, as a result directly of that hike, deciding to move to Utah across the country. So I was clearly in the middle of some really big life defining questions. And so this death work and life work and this framework of, being outside and backpacking as a metaphor for your life, we're all kind of just bubbling around in the periphery of all that.
Yeah, I think it makes sense too, right? You're not going to like solve all your problems while you're on the hike, right? Like
No.
the idea is to go on the hike and enjoy the hike and try and get as much from it as you can. And then once you're able to complete the hike and then you're home and you have some time to decompress, that's sort of where the reflection comes in, and that's where you could sort of find a new perspective and be able to make some of these decisions that you're trying to make. I think it sounds like everything sort of happened in that timeline, which makes sense to me. And I could totally relate too with like these like extremes, you know, where like you're going, and then you're also just like, I'm gonna spend the next 3 days in bed and do nothing. I am so similar in the sense of, you know, I it's like extremes with me where it's either one or the other in everything in life. And I think that that's something a lot of people can relate to, and it can be difficult because you can get burnt out. And I think you sort of found what works for you, which is getting outside and just doing something that's going to sort of take your focus on all of those stressors, at least for a while. And I think you're totally right. I think people are stuck inside too much. And I've always felt like there's really nothing better than just getting up and just going for a walk, even if it's just around the block. Like there's just so much value in just not looking at a screen, which I think is pretty obvious, but
Yeah.
also just moving, just getting your body moving. It doesn't have to be this crazy thing. It could just be walking around the block a few times or taking your dog for a walk or walking with a friend or whatever. There is so much value in that. Now, granted, you decided to go on a 900-mile walk, which I would I don't think everybody's going to do, but it
What's
seems
that
like
point? That
it's
point, I want to highlight something you said, and I think you're kind of maybe segueing into it. Didn't mean to cut you off, but I really want to before I
Yeah,
forget.
go
You
ahead.
mentioned what works for you. I found what works for me, and that's a really crucial point. I think that that's where the death piece really comes in, this contemplation of mortality, because like I was saying before, when you get in that space of like, oh, I'm terminal now. I have 6 months to live. I have a year to live. Suddenly, I have cancer. I don't know how long I have left to live, but I know it's not. Probably not 50 years. Thinking about death and mortality in that way can really help you solve, like, discover your priorities so that you can find what works for you. Because obviously, a 900-mile hike in the woods is not feasible for everybody. And sometimes nature isn't everybody's cup of tea. Like, they might not want the mountains the way I crave them. Maybe their mountains are something else. And actually, in likeliness, they probably are something else. And so, I think that in this like information saturated society that we're living in, it's really confusing and it becomes hard to clarify like what do I want and what does work for me. And I think this death piece has a key to that. It's like, okay, let's pretend that I am gonna die in a year. Let's also pretend I'm gonna die. Let's also pretend maybe the diagnosis on the plate is like you'll die in a week. The priorities of what I'm gonna do in a week versus a year are very different, but they'll immediately highlight like what is important to me. So if I'm gonna die in a week, I think my pretty obvious thing would be I'm gonna immediately fly home and see my family, spend all the time I can with them, spend time with my partner, basically be a hermit and hang out with them. If I had a year, I would still spend time with them, but I would probably do other things. I would probably see if I physically can, I'd like to travel some, see some things, go on a cruise, like all those things. things more personal, my own priorities would be like finishing my book or kind of doing, focusing more on this death work stuff. Righting wrongs with people I've like screwed over in the past, things like that. And so, in the wake or in the face of death, mortality, terminal diagnoses, whatever, all of that kind of confusion and chatter and like society telling you what's important. Oh my God, focus on this. Oh my God, focus on that. The world's ending, politics, the election, global warming, war. Like, obviously, those things all deserve our attention. But I think that in the chatter of all of that, you can lose yourself and you lose what matters to you. And this death piece kind of helps you circle back and come home to what you really value in life. And that's been the case for people in hospice. That's really one reason I love this idea of being a death doula and the legacy work aspect of it. And like that clarifying what matters to you. What do you want to do before you die? What affairs do you need to tighten up before you die? What would make you happy to do before you die? And I think those questions we should be engaging with long before we get to terminal diagnosis point. So that's really what I just kind of wanted to bring in there. Like, yes, the I found what works for me, but that's not very helpful in a larger scale. Like, we need to figure out how does that work as a framework for other people, and more importantly, how a conversation with death and dying can really illuminate those things for us in this information overload that we're unfortunately stuck in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a million different versions of the 900-mile hike,
Oh
right?
yeah,
And
sure.
it's just figuring out what works for you. And sort of just going back to what you were saying, I think it's important to feel like you have a purpose, right? And that's what I think people are searching for a lot. And I think that sort of ties in with death as well, is well, that feeling of being lost and uncertain about what you're going to do in your future is scary. And obviously, depending on the circumstance. But you mentioned, oh, I have a year left, or I have a month left, and it's like, well, you might have a month left, you might have a year left. Honestly, most of us will never really know until
No.
it happens, right? So it's difficult. It's hard to navigate that at times and to make these decisions that can affect you a year down the road or a month down the road. So I think, and what we try and talk about on the podcast pretty consistently is to mostly just not be so hard on yourself and realize that everybody's sort of going through the similar things and that it's okay if you don't have things figured out yet. There's plenty of time, hopefully. And try and also just enjoy the time you got. Do whatever, however you want to do that. I think there are plenty of things to be stressed about, and life is stressful in general, and it's hard sometimes, and working a lot and focusing on career goals is a great distraction. But at the end of the day, I think, again, it's like, try not to take things too serious and try and enjoy yourself a little bit.
I'm definitely not saying do away with your career goals. I mean, I
No,
have
of
them.
course
I have
not.
aspirations and goals and dreams, but it's also like, I think, and kind of like what we're saying on this death podcast, we try to discuss, like, calm down. Like, I think this death piece really helps kind of clarify that. Like, yeah, it brings things into perspective. Like, yes, I have career goals. Maybe death. Maybe I don't have career goals, and this death piece can help me figure out what that is. Or I have career goals, but also let me remember that I'm mortal and my freaking career isn't necessarily the end all be all. Like, I still have loved ones. They could die tomorrow. I could die tomorrow. And just kind of keeping that perspective in mind is, I think, has been very clarifying and therapeutic for me. And it seems like others as well, because there seems to be such a craving to talk about this stuff in some places anyway, not everywhere.
Yeah, for
Yeah,
sure.
I had to amend that.
No, I mean, I definitely have, that this group of people in my life where these conversations are happening constantly, and it's obviously very enjoyable. And then I do have other friends who are just like, I don't want to think about it. Don't talk to me about it. And that's fine too.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm not here to decide how you're supposed to deal with the fact that you might die one day. I just know for me, I have to talk about it. So, this is just the world that I'm living in, and that's sort of how it goes for me. You mentioned that you're writing a book. I'm curious to hear about the book. What is it, if you could talk about it, what is it that you're working on right now?
So I've had the inspiration for this book sitting around in me for a few years, long before I went on this hike, actually. And really the inspiration for it was this issue of the 20 and 30 something year old demographic group, of which I myself am part of. And I looked around in just the general society and also my friend groups and also in books and just biographies and memoirs. And I've noticed this general trend of people in this age group who have kind of done all of life's supposed to. They checked off all of the boxes. And even after doing that, they suddenly wake up one day and find out that they're miserable. And that was something that I already spoke to in our chat today, that I had that like existential reckoning. And I don't think that's unique to just me. And from what I've observed, it's not. And so I've been wanting to speak to that topic a long time about like these questions of, does any of this really matter? What is the meaning of my life? What am I going to do with my life? Is this all there is? Do we just wake up and do the same thing over and over and over again till we die? And that whole conversation is just something huge for me. I feel like a lot of people are wrestling with it. And so then I kind of wanted to introduce the death piece into that, this mortality conversation of how contemplating these things, contemplating our mortality, really helps in this process of kind of clarifying firstly, like, what do you want? Again, as we already discussed, like how that process can kind of work for you. And how, of course, it's going to be really subjective, like how it can help you clarify your priorities, but that they will be very unique to you and that yours might be different than mine, for example. And how this death piece and this death conversation really helps infuse a sort of gratitude for life that's beyond, like I was saying, like beyond just the happy, happy dappy mugs and count your blessings and be grateful and all that. And yeah, I think that death part is so crucial to that point of conversation. And I wasn't really sure what that, like a book like that would look like. I didn't want it to just be a self-help. I really wanted to somehow infuse the outdoors into it because I know I've always felt the most alive outside. And then, of course, went on that hike and I really felt alive outside. I got to be in that space for 3 months. And so I'm like, okay, so this book slowly kind of fell into place after that. And it's like a self-help book disguised as the story of a hike. And the story of the hike is disguised as like a self-help book. They kind of play off of each other. So yeah, the book is basically all that we've been talking about today, like this, how to live, how that impacts your dying, how it helps you be grateful, how it helps you find out what really is important to you. And that's all kind of set against my hike on the trail and the things I learned out there and the crazy mishaps I got into and how all that kind of ties back in to this living piece and kind of like, is this all there is? And to me, the answer is absolutely it's not. I have learned that it is not. So, as a death doula and I'm still in my hospice chaplaincy program, I believe I bring that perspective of like death and dying to this conversation of self-help, millennial living, and how that all kind of works together. So like integrating studies of death and dying. I draw upon a bunch of other books and speakers in this realm, besides just my own, obviously. I think that that helps us lean hard into the present moment. I think that one of the things that the trail and my hike really brought home for me, and one reason why I chose to set this whole book and conversation amidst the backdrop of my hike, was that it brought in that second half of that piece of you're not like that balance piece we're talking about. Like it's not just all about being in the moment and absorbing nature and being happy, happy, happy. That's a huge part. And being grateful and positive and all those vibes. That's a big part of it. But the biggest piece for me, what really kind of threw it all together was that other half, that piece of how to become your goals and become where you're going next and like move towards those dreams and ambitions while also making space for that recognition of gratitude and profoundness and this miracle of being alive. And so that's really what the book's ultimate message is like how you can be where you are and be present in that and be grateful for that while you're also moving towards becoming what's next and kind of finding that balance. And that balance is really hard. Like we've already discussed, like we both struggle with it. And so I really wanted to kind of speak to that piece. And overall, I think my favorite way of describing the book is it's my deep wrestling with all these questions that I've wrestled with in the past or that I still face today, and how my death worker lens kind of helps inform my moving through these difficult questions. I deeply wrestle with them. I deeply struggle with them. And they're all questions about being human and being alive and meaning and purpose. And really, when you think about it, all those questions, they kind of boil down into just one. And that question is, how do we make the most of our numbered days? You know, hence the name of my organization. How do we make the most of our numbered days? I think it bears repeating to just really sit on that. What makes it worth being alive? And how can we find out those things? And I think that in that potent time of being 20 and 30 something, I use that phrase 20 and 30 somethings all the time, is a really potent time for kind of digging at those questions, because now you're at an age where you're not like a teenager in mom and dad's house anymore. And you're not being told what to do and kind of guided down a certain path, right? You're at a point where you've broken out of that. And now you're kind of independent and you're on your own and figuring it out. But you're also not like 40 or 50 firmly established in a career, perhaps. You have a family, you kind of have a general trajectory of where things are going. And not the people in that age group can't experience these changes, because they have and they do. And I've read about them and I know some of them in real life. But it's a little less, I think, common for them to be as lost feeling as I would imagine this age group are. And so that's why I think it's important to kind of place them at the heart of this discussion, because these questions I feel apply to these people so very deeply. And I'm just really passionate about helping people figure out like how to make the most of their numbered days. I think that's the heart of death work. I think that's the heart of what my book is about, that to teach a man to die is inherently to teach a man to live. I believe that's the philosophical quote. And so yeah, that's really the general synopsis of my book, and I'm really excited to keep on developing it, keep on writing it. I'm about halfway through it, and I'll keep you posted with updates.
Nikki, I really appreciate you, taking the time to come on the podcast and talk about, what's going on and what you're up to. And I'm really excited, obviously, to see where you continue to move in this death world. And if you want to maybe point people in a direction on where they could go for it, maybe if they're in that same space and they're looking for some help with like creating an online presence or whatever it may be. Maybe they want to reach out to you for some death doula work. Where can people find you?
Yeah, number-days.com, my website. That's the best place to really get in touch with me. There are links there to my death worker website offering. So any death doulas or any new doulas or just any doulas have a website and it just needs a little bit of love. You can reach out and we could totally chat through that. And or if you're not a death worker and you're just kind of a curious soul who wants to chat through death anxieties or like just looking for us, just thirsty for a space to talk about this stuff, I'm here. I offer grief support as well. All of this at this point is free. I don't know when I'm going to charge. I don't know what I'm going to charge. Right now, I'm just happy to put this out in the world. I know people. I know it's a demand. It's been rather frustrating trying to put this out there, and people are like, "No, we don't need you." And I'm like, "Yeah, you do. There, everybody needs grief support. Everybody needs death support, or just this kind of language." So, yeah, number-days.com, best way to reach out to me. I'd love to chat about any of this stuff. So,
Thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
absolutely.